He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And good morning and welcome to the April 19th Friday edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I am Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital Management, sitting in for Bill today as we wrap up the week. And, of course, we've got Bill traveling up from back up from Sarasota this today. So I'll be hanging out and taking care of things. We've got off to a decent start, a little bit of a mixed bag. We've got the Dow just under 38,000, up a little over 0.5% to 37,986. Up 210 points. S&P 500 is also slightly up today, up above that 5,000 mark at 5,014. Up just under 4 points today at essentially flat, up 0.07%. NASDAQ's the one that remains a little bit troublesome, down 40 basis points today or 0.4%. to 15,538. That's down 62 points at the time. Crude oil hanging in there, obviously got a bump yesterday evening when the announcement came out that the Israelis were attacking or in some form or fashion. It's still a little bit to be seen if it was drones, missiles, planes, combination of both. But regardless, some sites attacked there in Iran, and as that was occurring, gold or crude and gold spiked. But crude's right now at 82.80, gold up 23.82, just under $2,400 there. Both of them are essentially flat, crude and crude oil and gold. Bitcoin getting a bid today, up $1,000 to $64,884, up 1.5%. So, well, we've got ran through that. Well, welcome again to the Friday edition of the Best Stocks Now show. Again, I'm your host, Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital Management. I'm sitting in for Bill today as he makes his way back from sunny Sarasota. My guess is he's battling the airport there. So I did that yesterday, and thankfully my trip was smooth. Hopefully Bill will have similar luck today. But, of course, we had a great time visiting folks down there in Sarasota. And first and foremost, want to thank all those that came over, took the time to come see us. We always have a great time meeting folks, getting some putting some faces with a name for those that we haven't met before, and then also got to see some clients and, you know, old friends that have been with us for a while. So had a great time. I'd say, you know, probably most of the discussion points really kind of centered around a little bit of the narrative that obviously we've been talking about for some time. But number one is just, you know, how we see the market going forward. Always a changing thought process. Of course, in the last few weeks, we've Bill's been taking the foot off the pedal, which as we get into some of the numbers for how the market's really reacted since in the month of April so far, makes sense to kind of take your foot off the pedal there. Other big question we get a lot of times is just putting idle cash to work in the market. It's, you know, hey, I've got, I haven't been invested in the market, or I got spooked from the market, a while back. One to get back in the market and how to do so. So we had some discussions around that topic. And then lastly, just, you know, reshaping the portfolios or reshaping the equity exposure that folks are already taking. When we meet with new clients, potentially new clients who are already positioned in some form or fashion, of course, when those When those dollars make it over to us and our management, you know, Bill goes through what we've kind of talked about as our gardening process, where he's going to go through, you know, the list of names that come over. And, you know, some of those may get jettisoned immediately. Some of those, you know, may be names we own in our strategies, and other names may be, you know, not exactly where we want to be, but are giving us some exposure to parts of the market that we're okay with. And so over time, he'll morph that portfolio into whatever strategy we happen to be employing. The important thing is there is, you know, the biggest goal was for clients and investors in general just to be compensated for the amount of risk you're taking. And so when we look at, you know, Bill kind of jokes about and alludes to in terms of a lot of these larger wirehouses or brokerage firms, you know, holding a lot of the same names, classic example being Johnson & Johnson, and we saw some Johnson & Johnson this week and some portfolios. But, you know, the point is, you know, folks are taking a certain amount of risk or equity risk in the market, and you know, our goal is really to make sure our clients are being compensated for the amount of risk we're taking, you know, that you're taking. And so that's why we're, you know, happy to jettison Johnson & Johnson, J&J, for, you know, Eli Lilly or Novo Nordisk or, you know, just other companies out there that, you know, still have earnings growth available in the future and in higher prospects than some of the old sleepy, tired, large names out there. But that, you know, that's always always great. You know, like I said, always great to get to meet some folks, see what's going on out there. Of course, it's been you know, pretty busy week. Of course, you know, as a whole, market continues to, you know, really balance in, you know, two things. Number one, geopolitical risks, as Bill has alluded to a lot as of late. Of course, you know, tensions in the Middle East. Of course, that escalating at least a bit yesterday evening seems to haven't seen any, you know, much response since, at least up to this point. But we'll likely be waiting and see what happens over the weekend. So wouldn't surprise me if you get a bit of a risk off move, particularly on the oil and commodity side of things, where you know, you get a bit of a breather while folks kind of wait on the sidelines and see how things develop over the weekend. And it's really, we've seen kind of that flight to safety. As we've noted, you've seen, you know, plenty of 10-year treasury tick up. We've got up as high as maybe 4.6 or so this week, which is the highest we've been in 2024, and of course, with some of the tensions escalating, you know, yesterday evening, you saw a little bit of the you saw the 10-year treasury actually pull back, almost a bit of a flight to safety, and currently the 10-year sits right at 4.63, really giving up some of those gains that it made just a few hours ago in the pre-market trading. We're kind of wrapping up the week. Of course, we'll get we'll get into some kind of a recap of yesterday. We've also got a few earnings reports that hit this hit after hours yesterday and pre-market this morning. A few big names. We'll hit those as well, and that'll lead into earnings season will really kick off next week, and the week after will be after the next 2 weeks, we'll know a lot about that earnings picture for this quarter and on a go forward basis. But we'll, in terms of, like I said, in terms of the retaliatory strikes, you know, that, like I said, seems to be a bit of a pause at the moment, just in terms of the market's reaction in both the equities and debt markets to that news with those waking up to that this morning. But in terms of the, you know, how the markets finished yesterday, it was really a mixed bag. You had the NASDAQ was down about 0.5%, 0.52% to be exact. S&P 500 was down about a 0.25%, 0.22, and actually the Dow squeaked out a small gain yesterday, up 0.07%. We can, you know, as Bill continues to highlight and send off in terms of, you know, from when you're looking at the charts, continues to test that, you know, that support level. Then it's, you know, somewhat broke support level, and, you know, and a few of those metrics hasn't been, you know, lengthy support, you know, breakage, but, you know, it's one of these things where when you look at the chart where we're at, you know, mathematically, the next turn would appear to be down, but we'll see, and we'll get into a lot of these numbers. We're just getting started here this morning on the Best Stocks Now show, and we'll be right back. Welcome back here to the Friday, April 19th edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I'm Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital, taking the wheel for Bill today as he makes his way back, to Charleston after our Sarasota visit this past week. From market perspective, looks like, just to check in, things have gone a little bit south. Looks like, actually, nope, that's good news. I had a different screen up. Yeah, so we still got a mixed bag. NASDAQ's gotten a little worse, down about 0.7% to 15,481. We've got the S&P just under that psychological 5,000 number, down 0.24% today. And then the Dow, up to look at that when we get into the later second half of the show, we'll see what's driving the Dow. But Dow's actually up 0.39% at the moment, to 37,925. And lastly, gold, crude oil, which, of course, you had a little jump in earlier, late last night, early this morning, depending on where you're at in the world. But seems to calm down a bit. Crude oil is up to $83, a little over $83 a barrel, up 0.45% today. And gold is just under that 2400 mark at 2391. Again, welcome to Best Stocks Now show. Second, getting to the second quarter here. You know, as we talked about in terms of the, you know, market yesterday, S&P, as I mentioned, was down 0.22%. That's the fifth day in a row, 5-day losing streak now for the S&P 500. First time since, October of last year. And these pullback, you know, these pullbacks certainly from, you know, where we you know, came from, really from a charting standpoint, you know, some consolidation is going to be healthy from a market perspective. Doesn't mean it feels great, you know, as we sit here at the moment. But, you know, over time, it's, you know, we're getting a little bit extended there, as Bill's mentioned, particularly from a P.E. ratio standpoint. In the 22-ish range or 21.8-ish range. And so that's kind of, you know, come down a bit. Right now we've got, like I said, the S&P has notched its longest losing streak since October of 2023. Currently the Dow is down just over, the S&P 500 is now down just over 4% in April. So that's that pullback I was just talking about, and I believe we're about 4.9% down off of the all-time high of the S&P 500. So the question is, of course, you know, why, right? Why have we been having the pullback? What's the biggest you know, reasoning in the market, biggest driver, right, of the recent pullback? And I know we're probably all tired of hearing about them, but it's, you know, certainly interest rate related, and, you know, very much geopolitical or uncertainty, you know, risk uncertainty related as well. When you take the global tension piece. Well, as you have geopolitical risk, naturally can affect supply chains. You know, can affect obviously, you know, oil supply, being able to sell oil into the market. And so in doing so, right, that's caused some commodities to tick up, particularly oil and energy, which in turn is inflationary. So that drives potential inflation, which can obviously is going to be a tailwind for interest rates and making them higher. Of course, as I mentioned in the segment prior, as you know, when you have this flight to safety, sometimes you can get, you know, those two things can offset each other because folks will naturally move towards treasuries or the dollar in times of crisis as a flight to safety, which, you know, actually makes those interest rates or yields go down. So it's, you know, certainly some push-pull there. You know, the biggest thing, of course, is just the interest rate and the, you know, and the continued uncertainty, mounting uncertainty really around the data dependent Fed. Gotten a lot of Fed speak over the last couple of weeks. The biggest thing there is, you know, over the last, you know, like I said, 3 to 4 weeks. You know, Bill's been, you know, taking his foot off the gas. And what we mean by that is just, you know, we've been, you know, raising more cash in the portfolios for clients and also increasing our overall inverse exposure at the same time. And naturally, you look at the market and the S&P 500 has actually had $10 billion of net outflows in the last few weeks. SPY, I believe, is the biggest ETF, mutual fund, whatever you want to call it, biggest vehicle, investment vehicle out there. And you've had, you know, $10 billion leave and you know, likely going to cash or other you know, safety, non-risk assets. And like I said, to put that in perspective, March 28th, the S&P hit an all-time high at 5,264. And since then, the S&P is, as of yesterday, the S&P was down 4.9%. So we've got, we've had a, essentially that's half of a, you know, what's considered a correction in the market from the high. We're getting close to, like I said, we were just under that 5,000 mark and hadn't been under there since February 24th. So we've got, you know, we've had some bumps and bruises along the way, but that's natural. Markets, you know, don't move in a straight line. So it's you know, these things are really fairly natural. Of course, you know, you throw in the geopolitical side, that's the piece obviously that has the most uncertainty around it, the one that's the hardest to quantify, and also tends to be the hardest to hedge against. So the, you know, kind of the interest rate portion, the Fed speak, the market pulling back from an all-time high, a little consolidation, all that is natural isn't certainly as worrisome as, you know, potential geopolitical risk that, you know, we can all use our imagination and what could potentially happen out there and you know, quantifying that and hedging against it's usually fairly tough. You just don't have a great way to hedge, certainly purely hedge against those types of instances. And where we're at, you get these, you know, we get these surveys, and currently we've got, you know, bearish sentiments above historical averages. I've seen that we're getting close to some oversold, you know, metrics for the S&P 500 anyway. So we're getting, you know, when you have, when you have a lot of this uncertainty, particularly around the Federal Reserve, because you know, you had the Federal Reserve was initially expected to have potentially 7 cuts in 2024. That number kind of, you know, sits around 2, and we've heard, you know, a number of Fed speakers mentioned that we might have 0 in 2024 in terms of rate cuts. So that's really, you know, kind of the driver and dynamic dialogue in the market at the moment, things that we're talking about internally and things that we see the talking heads on on the financial channels talking about out there. But we're through the first half of the Best Stocks Now show, and we'll be right back for the second half. Get into some individual stocks.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back here to the second half of the Friday weekending edition of the Best Stocks Now show. It's April 19th. I'm Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital, serving as a relief captain for Bill this morning as he navigates the airways and gets back up here in Charleston, so we can get back in the bunker and get working on that on this week's newsletter. But from a market perspective, doesn't seem like lots changed since the last break. We're Dow's up just under 0.5%. S&P's down about 0.25%, and the Nasdaq continues to kind of bring up the rear, down just over 0.75%, up or down 0.86% at the moment. Crude and gold both relatively flat. Crude's up about 0.5%, and gold's up about 0.25%. So, just to kind of build off of what we've been discussing, and then of course we'll dive into to three of those large, big name earnings reports that came out. One after hours yesterday, and two pre-market this morning. But the is getting into the bearish sentiment, and we've kind of anticipated this a bit, whether it's bearish from a market perspective, whether it's bearish from a headline producing upcoming election as we get closer to it, right? You're going to have naturally sentiment numbers, right, with with some of the negativity that we're very likely to see from a election standpoint, from both sides, is wouldn't likely be a waning on sentiment. The outlook, the biggest reason for this, like I said, 34% of respondents on this latest survey of American Association of Individual Investors. It's also known as the AAII. Bill does a number of presentations for some groups around the city, groups that are with cities around the country. But a group right now, 34% responded that they feel the market will trend down in the next 6 months, and that's compared to just a week before, 24% said that. So 10% more. Bringing that up just after a week. So, and that's also important to note, it's above the historic bearish kind of high of 31%. So, the question is why, right? Is a lot of this sentiment or kind of, souring, right, at least at the current time in the market? Souring may be a bit of a strong word, but the reason being is you've got, as I mentioned, you started the 2024 with potentially 7 rate cuts on the docket for the year, and of course that's kind of been whittled down as a combination of strong economic data. Just yesterday, weekly jobless claims came in at were unchanged really. I think at 212,000. Same number it was the week before. Job market remains strong. I think I saw a number where there's 6 million more people, at work now than pre-COVID. It depends on what kind of jobs those folks are doing, obviously. But, you know, overall, you've got, you know, 6 million more heads, right, and potentially 6 million more pocketbooks, you know, spending into this economy, which continues to, you know, to be resilient, particularly when you look at it in the context of the rest of the world. So, you know, you've got, we had a lot of Fed speak this week. You had, you know, Chairman Powell on Tuesday, you know, made the comment that, you know, policy needs more time to work through, which means, you know, it tells you that the current policy needs more time to work through to bring it to slow the economy, which, you know, likely means you're not making much of a policy change, particularly not on the cut side of that argument. The, you know, we also had John Williams this week. He's the New York Fed president yesterday. He kind of put a little bit of a wet blanket on the market yesterday that, you know, simply he doesn't feel an urgency to cut rates. So the data, you know, continues to be at least, you know, if you don't want to call it, you know, if you don't want to call the economic data great, it at least continues to be good enough to continue to kind of push those rate expectations further and further, rate cut expectations further and further down the timeline. And we also got, you know, Rafael Bostic spoke yesterday. He's the Atlanta Fed president. He's you know, essentially repeating that the, you know, central bank, you know, is likely not going to cut until the end of the year. I mean, we initially had, I think it was like a 80% chance of a rate cut when I was looking at it. It started at the beginning of the year in May. So you had a, you know, market 80% were expecting, right, some rate cut in the next, you know, by May. And here we sit in April, the May meeting being the next one, and it's pretty much a 99% chance there's going to be, you know, no cut. So that's the, you know, that's the dynamic and where we kind of sit currently. I think the good news is that we're at least in a an earnings season. So hopefully, right, you know, you get these little, you know, doldrum here from a market perspective. And hopefully we can get some positive earnings, get some, you know, positive earnings expectations going forward to help, you know, change the narrative a bit, right, and help help pull the market back up. I say this a lot, and, but the market, you know, the stock market, it's really, it's a fashion show. It's, you know, you've got a, you know, it's just a, at the end of the day, it's supply and demand, and you know, you've got to have a whether it's positive sentiment or whether it's a, you know, a good story or whether it's, you know, actual good earnings, right? You know, all of those dynamics kind of fit together to, you know, to drive the market in the direction it's going. And, you know, interest rates play a huge part of that and have really ticked up to really their highest point in, you know, of the, of 2024. So we also just, as, you know, along those lines, saw yesterday where, long-term mortgage rates surpassed 7% for the first time in 2024. Obviously, that's going to, as we all know, that affects the economy, housing. I think existing home sales dropped 4.3% in March. That information came out yesterday, which makes sense. I mean, when you're at a, you've got a 30-year mortgage rate now at 7.1%. That's compared to 6.88% a week ago. And if you look back 12 months, we were at 6.39% 12 months from today. So, you know, mortgage rates have ticked up what looks like, you know, almost 0.7% since then. And that was before we had, we really had any talk of an official Fed pivot to potentially cutting rates. So, it's it's one of these things where there's a lot of reasons for the pullback that we've seen in the market. We'd probably be a little bit more concerned if there wasn't a, you know, a particular pieces of information that we could kind of gravitate towards to, you know, give us some reasoning or, you know, or causation behind what we, you know, this 4.9% pullback that we've seen since The S&P hit an all-time high. We've got Goldman Sachs also talking about on the rate front. There, you know, they came out and said that they believe that the U.S. Treasury could reach 5% again. That kind of goes along the lines of you know, some information we got from J.P. Morgan, you know, last week. Of course, you know, and this ties into the you know, what the consensus was. Like I said, the you know, before 20, at the beginning of 2024, you expected 7 rate cuts. Right now, only 2 are expected. That's a big, you know, if you think of a quarter point every time, you're talking about, you know, 1.25% on the Fed funds rate that, you know, folks thought would be cut in 2024. And it's, you know, not coming to fruition. And then, you know, mix over the top of that, right? We layer over the top of that the Israeli-Iran conflict, Israeli-Hamas conflict, and you know, you've got a classic mix of uncertainty, which we know the market hates uncertainty. So that's really where we see this, and like I said, hopefully the next 2 weeks these big earnings seasons can pull us out. And when we get back here to the fourth quarter of the show, we'll get into some American Express earnings. I think Procter & Gamble reported, and we'll get Netflix's report as well. So we'll be right back. You got to go. Here to the fourth and final quarter of the Best Stocks Now show. I am Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital Management. I'm holding down the fort for Bill today as he's making his run back up here from Sarasota. And certainly from a market perspective, still a bit of a mixed bag. We've got the still divergence between the NASDAQ and the and the Dow. We've got the Dow up, I think, about a little over 0.5% at the moment, and NASDAQ continues to be the laggard at you know, down about 0.8% last time I checked here. We are, you know, as Bill's been referencing in his newsletter, on a weekly basis, and if you want to stay up to date with our thoughts on the markets, you know, feel free to get Bill's newsletter. You can always sign up for 2 weeks of the full newsletter at GundersonCapital.com. Or if you'd like to have a discussion with us, always here to bounce some ideas off of, whether you've got, you know, some portfolio management question in terms of positioning, or if you run into any financial planning issues out there, always feel free to use us as a resource. I'm always happy to discuss this stuff. So give us a call, 855-611-BEST. That's 855-611-2378. And you'll end up, 99% chance you'll end up talking with Edie. And, you know, she's in charge of our schedules, and she'll get you set up to chat with Bill and myself. So please do that and look us up. And of course, you know, these newsletters, definitely these next couple of weeks, particularly you know, Bill continues to in earnings season, he'll give his, you know, grades for earnings season up to this point. And like I said, we haven't had a ton of reporting yet. And after next week and after the next 2 weeks, we're going to have a pretty good number, a percentage of those S&P 500 companies that have already reported, and it'll give you know, Bill's analysis in terms of his market outlook. That's a great part of the newsletter. One of my other favorite sections of the newsletter is the technical analysis part. The reason that's important, particularly where we're at now, is you know, we've been testing and even breaking through a little bit of support levels there at the large indices, And so it's just always good to know where we stand, and Bill will lay that out and give you those, you know, what those price points are to keep out. 5,000 is kind of this, is the, kind of that S&P number. Earlier today I saw a trade just below 5,000. So that's one of those numbers to keep in mind. Get a copy of the newsletter at GundersonCapital.com and get an idea of what Bill's thinking and what Bill's putting together over there from an analysis standpoint. We got a couple of big reports that we got. One of them we own in our dividend and growth portfolio. But yesterday after the close, Netflix came out. You know, from a reporting standpoint, numbers seemed to be a pretty strong quarter for the streamer. The streamer additions came in at added 9.33 million new subscribers. Market was looking for 4.84 million, so you know, essentially almost doubled that number in terms of additions. And they continue to make some progress on the password sharing front. One important thing is their operating margin actually rose 7 points to 28% this time around. So, you know, from a profitability standpoint, that's obviously going to be, you know, beneficial, accretive to earnings there. One interesting note that Netflix mentioned, and companies do this over time as they mature, they're going to stop providing some quarterly membership numbers in roughly about a year. So they've got some subscriber different metrics that they will provide to the street and analyst, and sometimes that those numbers can analysts may focus on it, but in reality, as companies mature, those numbers may not be those numbers aren't as relevant. Of course, you know, Netflix knows, you know, they're running the business, they know if the numbers are relevant or not. Not exactly the way that Netflix would like them to. So in other words, you know, next year they're going to, you know, remove some of that information or quit sharing that number. Apple did this in part of their business segment recently too. It's not unique, but anytime you have, you know, anytime you get less information in this business, there's always at least a skeptical portion where you're, you know, what are they trying to hide or what are they going to know? I'm going to get through a couple more here. American Express, that's a name we own in our dividend growth portfolio. Earnings per share came in at 3.33, beat by 37 cents. And revenue came in line. So from that standpoint, business is driven by higher net interest income. We had some increases in card spending. That's the that's that resilient U.S. consumer that referenced earlier in the show. American Express. I haven't seen what the price is doing right this minute. It was really basically pretty flat the last time I checked it here. Last one that reported is just a good example of a stock that we don't own and you know, may not high probability that we may never own them. It's Premier Procter & Gamble. Biggest thing there is, you know, they kind of had a bit of a missed report. Their organic sales grew at 3%. You know, while their earnings EPS was up 18% year over year, the question is, what's the go forward, right? And why a stock like, you know, Procter & Gamble? I know we mentioned Johnson & Johnson earlier. I'm not picking on Procter & Gamble, but their, you know, their earnings per growth range for 2024 is, you know, expected to be 1-2%. So from a valuation standpoint, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know when you're plugging in a 1-2% growth rate, that probably not going to meet the criteria for, you know, for us and for what we would consider our best stocks now. So thank you again. Wrapping up here for the week. Feel free to go out and get the newsletter, GundersonCapital.com. But we hope you guys all have a great weekend, and a happy birthday to my mom, whose birthday is on Saturday.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.